When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context, plus tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Is it a beneficial biological reaction, or is it an intangible, ethereal thing?
Love in English, there's only one word for love, and other languages I know have other words to describe a certain kind of love.
English poetry is beautiful because we have so many different words for things, and yet something like love, we have one word for.
When we were in elementary school, there was the only thing we could say is, I like her. We had to say like because there was no term for between like and love. What is that? Welcome back, everybody, to another Tutor Ramble episode. I am one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
And today, Rich and I, you can see by the title, by the very intense thumbnail, we are discussing a mother's love.
Now, and Austin, why would someone listen to two guys talk about what a mother's love actually means?
I'm asking the same fucking question. And I think I came down to this. So we're talking about mother's love, a child's love to their parent versus friendships versus romance and love, but also themes of regret. And the reason we're talking about all this, we recently read a very short story by Ken Liu called The Paper Menagerie. We're going to be talking about the themes in that book. It's really not, you can listen to this. We're going to talk about what happens, but it's a 20-page short story.
Yeah.
It's not, spoilers are on limit
it's
here.
It's 10 minutes. I don't think it qualifies. If we spoil it, you're not losing anything out on it. Just go read it after this.
Exactly.
I don't know. Spoiling a short story is not the same thing. It's fine. But full spoilers for that short story, but you shouldn't care. Just listen to the whole thing, then read it later.
Yeah, it is. We're talking about those themes that this inspired us to talk about. And I have video. And did your mom get back to you on the message as well?
She doesn't like being recorded.
Yeah, okay. So my mom sent the recording, what she thinks a mother's love is. So we're going to get a mom's perspective as well.
Yeah.
But I think it could be interesting to get it from the child's perspective. I think that's why this could be two friends talking about a mother's love. It's a very
nice
weird,
and wholesome episode.
It's wholesome, but also not something you'd expect. I think we could have a take that maybe it isn't as accurate as a mother's would be, but seeing the child's perspective,
yeah,
could be insightful.
It may not be right, but it could be an interesting perspective on it.
Exactly. And to start with your perspective, Rich, asking the question, what is a mother's love?
I think it's probably of the types of love that you can have, like love between a friend, the love between a spouse, love for a child.
A best friend.
A friend. Don't get ahead of yourself here.
Anyways.
Business partner. No, but that whole thing, there is something, a mother loves their child in a...
unconditional?
And it's the unconditional love aspect of it. In, so a father does as well, but there's another layer to it of a mother's love is more protective, a more fierce love that I normally see where... like a father would love their child in a slightly different way. Fierce and all that, but do you know what I mean? It's not the same. They show that love in different ways.
I could see that, but what? Where is the a parent's love to a child and then distinguishing mother's love versus
that? Yeah, exactly. So like
father's
the love. Big umbrella of a parent's love for a child.
And is, prepare for a lot of generalizations this episode. So
yeah, sure.
And again, when you're so you're saying mother's love is maybe there's the biological aspect too. Where
like sure.
you bear the child for 9 months and then baby comes out.
Well, then also just all the biological changes that kind of go into you.
Hormonal.
Well, just even the listening aspect of when a mother just after giving birth has a high sensitivity to being able to hear their child. Now, is that due to like them having their hearing changing to be more sensitive to higher pitch noises, or is it just to their child? I'm not exactly sure on the evidence behind that, but I do know that is the case of a common story of, you know, mom and dad in bed, kids crying, and wakes, you know, the dad wakes up, goes, man, the kid was asleep all night. That was great. And mom's like, he cried. He got up like 7 times. You didn't hear one of them. But, you know, the mother always hears when her child's crying.
So. Also, maybe the dad's just making excuses. I don't know.
That's a possibility.
Like, I slept through it, babe. I slept through all that. I swear.
But no, there is a fierce protection that I think the reason why people see it in a special way is it is almost sacrificial. It is the – you always hear stories of the a mother who's able to save her child in like incredibly – dire scenarios of like, I think people have seen the videos of a woman being able to like partly lift a car and like lean and lift a car because their child was trapped.
That
and like
the crazy mom
adrenaline of when their baby's in danger, like get out of the
Have you seen this way. Too? I see it. No, it's the internet. So the internet, mm-hmm. you can see anything.
Sure.
Anything. So, oh, it's a dark place. But with this mother's intuition, I see stories from people, and this one, again, it was probably a reel that I saw on Instagram where this daughter got a random text from her mom, and the mom told her, hey, are you going out to a bar tonight? You were still going out to the bar? And the daughter said, yeah, going out. She was somewhere. She was on vacation with some friends, and her mom says, hey, I just don't want you going to the bar tonight. I just have a weird feeling. And then the daughter doesn't go, and there was a shooting there that happened that night. Mm-hmm. So these really weird, almost unexplainable intuition and unexplainable, and we're going to use the words unconditional, unexplainable. There's this element to a mother's love that's just different. It just hits different. it does. It's just...
Yeah, when you receive a mother's love, it just hits different.
It's a different kind of love, man. Like, I've never felt like more of a bro with a podcast than this moment right now. So that mother's love aspect, what I will make, this is my firm opinion on a parent. So I'm going to give my mom sent the video of what she thinks of a mother's love. But before we play that, let's give our firm, before we get biased opinion
sure.
of the actual answer, our answer to a parent to a child owes that unconditional love. I think they ought to.
Yes.
If you do not give love to your child, there's something wrong with you. You are obligated
parent
to child. You have to love them. Now, mind you, barring like, hey, there are situations.
Yeah, there's exceptions of, you know, kids are literal psychopaths. Yes. And even in those cases, in all honesty, you still want. If you love your psychopath child, you want what's best for them. What's best for them is not necessarily letting them get away with everything. It's, oh, they need help. They need to be kept away from other people. Whatever it is, take the extreme example.
And I don't even mean this in a, so there's adoption. Sometimes parents have to give their kids away in dire situations, and all this can happen. And all I mean is, even if you have to give your kid up for adoption, that should be heartbreaking. Like, it shouldn't be with joy. Like, yes, I'm sending them off to the, the love aspect of whatever your real world situation is. There's so many, so we can't cover the million different scenarios, but there should be a deep bond, a connection to where you,
by default, there is a responsibility from parent to child.
Exactly.
There are reasons, there are different life scenarios in where that responsibility must be either voluntarily given away or is taken away from that parent. Like, there are situations that, but that doesn't negate the idea that there is an inherent responsibility between the relationship of a parent and child.
Whereas the child to parent, I don't think a child ought to love their parents. Love my parents. You love your parents.
But it is not mandatory.
It's not, especially because a child to the parent is conditional, I think. It is more, so of course there's a lot of, it's being very careful with that word, but I mean, hey, if your parent's neglectful, abusive, list all the things that the parent is not properly raising you. There are so many people. A lot of people are lucky to have great parents. I have great parents. I'm the best.
Yeah, I love my parents.
Mine are better than yours. No. You know what? Your dad's pretty cool.
My dad's pretty cool. My mom's came up with some pretty banger video titles.
Okay, all I'm saying.
My mom's pretty awesome.
My dad could beat up your dad. But she's just supposed to say it back.
I'm taking it seriously, I still think my dad comes on top.
Oh, you know what? Now I'm taking it very seriously, and I'm gonna have to go train my dad for a couple. So, the child to parent relationship, the reason it's not intrinsically owed is because your parent could, you are brought into this world. They are the ones that owe you that, not in reverse. The parent almost needs to earn that love in a way. Yes, there's the biological connection.
Yeah.
You need to earn that respect. Like, if you're a good enough parent, let me be one more careful thing to say is, if let's say the parent is doing good things for the child and the child is a rebel that doesn't love, like, there's that exception to where it's the child's fault. The child's just being a bad kid. There's lots of those too. But I guess I'm trying to get, you put it really succinctly of, there's a responsibility that the parent has to the child. The child doesn't have the responsibility to the parent. That's what we're getting at.
Which often I think I've heard it said, I've talked with other people about, where parents are sometimes sad of their relationship with their adult children. And that kind of thing, I feel so disconnected from my children.
Yeah.
A lot of that, to me, when I hear that, I can have sympathy. There's maybe scenarios that it comes up. And it could be explained. But my default thought is, they're not talking to you for a reason. Like, most of the time, a child doesn't disconnect from their parents. No child, I don't think, wants. They don't want to sever their connection to their parents. If they're doing so, it's normally for a reason. Maybe it's a good reason, maybe it's a bad reason, but normally there's a reason.
Well, sometimes bad reason too with Paper Menagerie. So the whole story here and why we're talking about mother's love is, the mom in this story has this unconditional love for her child. And the child in this story neglects his mother his entire life.
Yeah.
Because
the child is the asshole.
Well, the child is embarrassed of his mother because his mother was a mail order bride. And they from Asia, and he's in America now, and his mom being the immigrant, he's embarrassed of them speaking Mandarin, he's embarrassed of his culture, he's embarrassed of his mom.
And made fun of in his new school on their level of wealth, the types of food they eat, the toys that his mother can make, and his own language. And because he's pressured and feels isolated, he pushes away his mother and forces her not to talk in her native tongue to him, and won't respond, and insists that she speak English. And then later on, when he finds out that how she met his father, he's disgusted with her on, oh, who who would do that to themselves? Why would you ever do that? And later on, when he finds letters from his now dead mother, he realizes how much of a piece of shit he is, of how much she loved him and how much it meant to her, and the type of life that she went through to bring him into the world that he just refused to see. And
now she's dead. He's seeing it too late.
Yeah.
Which is the more tragedy to the story.
Also, a little bit here, like on some level, the dad is not the worst, but also really not the best of how much he did not. If you've read the story, I'm also like, you don't get his perspective, so I can't have the same emotional weight to it. But I'm kind of pissed with the dad of not defending his wife and really clapping back against the child and like kind of saying, no, you cannot disrespect your mother like that. Like, I cannot imagine a world of like me treating my mother that way. And then my dad just kind of going, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Wife, maybe change. Like, no, absolutely not. That's beside the point. But
yeah, dad wasn't a focal point in the story, but he had issues. Apparently, he just wasn't a perspective. We got very few lines from him, but
wasn't completely abusive and terrible, because clearly the mother did actually love him. And in their private moments, like, he cared for her. That came across in her letters in the story. Again, the story itself feels so real. It's kind of hard to forget sometimes. Like, yeah, oh, this is actually a fantasy fiction story. Right. Yeah. That's why I love it.
That's how great it is. Yeah. What do you want to play my mom's clip here? This is what her perspective is on what a mother's love means.
Okay.
So here we go, Mom. Her first time featured on the podcast. Here, this is a minute recording she sent in.
So here's my take on a mother's love. This is for you, Austin.
Oh, that's me.
So I truly wanted to just say it from my heart and not prepare anything, because I truly feel a mother's love is just simply the greatest joy for me as a mother in my life. You don't really know what love is, in my opinion, before you become a mother. It's just a sacred, special bond between their mother and their child. I can't even remember life before my son. and it's just a complete joy. You just, the caring for another, the worrying for another, and it's just endless. You could have a 2-year-old, you can have a 25-year-old or a 35-year-old. It'll never change. And it's ironic, I'm sitting here in my childhood bedroom as I videotape this. And I just feel it's just an endless, joyful experience that, you just have a deep connection with, and that bond and joy. And I hope this was entertaining for a mother's love.
Bye. Thank you, Mom. So I've played that video like 20 times already before the podcast. I was like, oh, thanks, Mom. It's just, and the takeaway I have from that, besides, I love you, Mom, besides that takeaway, is did you notice what she said there with, you don't know what love is until you become a mom?
My mother has said a very similar thing of,
right,
her life changed. Like, instantly life is different, of something she would never have expected, right, after she became a mother.
And there's probably a similar but different feeling as a father as well. Yeah. Life is just not the same. And it's, hey, when one of us becomes a father, maybe you are rich. I don't know. You're a little sneeze dog out there on the streets. So one day when that happens to us,
mm-hmm,
we'll be able to, maybe we go back to a video like this and talk about a father's love.
I think a lot of it comes, the unique aspect of it is oftentimes when you are given responsibility, it normally comes with a certain weight and doesn't always come across it. It's not always a joyful thing to be given responsibility on the surface. Like, it can be very stressful. It can be very like, oh, why am I burdened with it? Normally you have to be compensated in some way. Like, if you have a very important job, like, you are given responsibility at your career, you go, hey, that's a lot of responsibility. I need to be paid well.
Get this in return.
I'm getting this in return. Being a parent, you are immediately given the responsibility over another human life, this ultimate huge responsibility. But in addition, you get this immense joy and this
purpose.
you don't even have to really be paid for it. That's the thing. It's like the ultimate responsibility, and also you're not compensated for it in really any way. Nothing tangible.
It's all the intangibles and long-term.
The emotional return from it. Even though it's incredibly hard and difficult, it's not a joy in the sense of every moment of every day is the happiest moment. But even through the harder moments of it, you are still have that feeling of joy of this is your child.
Yeah.
That's a different thing. But there's also something that your mother touched on that my dad agrees with.
What's that?
Oh, she was saying that it doesn't change whether you're from, 2-year-old, 25, 35-year-old. That love for your child is the exact same.
Mm.
My dad has a similar thought of like, that's why he thinks that, at least for him, that a dad can eventually become friends with their son, but mother never does.
Well, mother and daughter can be maybe close.
Yeah.
Maybe
there's something off of, at least how my dad put it, is that at some point I became more of his friend rather than my dad. Like, right. Still my dad, of course, but like.
Well, he's no longer like responsible for your well-being.
Yeah.
Well, happiness, yes. Not he's responsible for taking care of you, literally, in that sense.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know when that point happens. It's just, it's a feeling versus my mom will always be my mom. There's things like, my mom is not my friend. My mom will always be mom first, friend-ish second, where dad can kind of eventually he takes the role of friend rather than dad.
I'm curious if that's a sex thing too, where if you're a girl turning a woman, if you're a female
versus mom and a male, daughter. Yeah.
Let's say mom and daughter. For males, for us, once we hit puberty, essentially puberty and onward, there's a different experience in life you have as a guy versus, and it can go into 1,000 different directions there. And then if you're a mother and daughter, and then you have different life experiences, you can look back at when you were in your teens and 20s. And when it came to big life things, it almost relate more with son of the same or son, daughter, you can relate more depending on the sex of the parents to child. And maybe that's part of it where later in your life you could become friends. You kind of can relate to some things that you were going through at that time. It's not a one for one, but do you think that's true more than it's not? Or am I wrong there?
Maybe, but I think a lot of it is a friend-like relationship is you don't have there's a lack of responsibility for a friend. It's less.
You don't owe your friend
You
anything.
Don't owe your friend a lot. Yeah. Where it's kind of how my dad puts it, at least, is at a certain point, like, it's my life. And so he may have opinions, but like, he has no responsibility anymore of like, you're going to live your life however you live it. And it's not my say anymore. That's kind of why it's not as much a fatherly role where, when my dad was my father, I listened to my father. Like, I have to. He has responsibility over me, and that responsibility gives him some level of authority over me. A great deal of authority over me. And because that authority has waned, so has that responsibility.
Well, and maybe part of that, because I can see from a dad to daughter's relationship, is always daddy's little girl. No matter if you're 20,
yeah, could be.
40. Where
that emotional feeling of responsibility maybe doesn't go away. The same thing with the son.
Exactly. So I'm thinking more, because I could see that with at least so my girlfriend, her mom to daughter, father to daughter relationship with them is kind of like that in reverse to us. Like,
sure.
I'm saying that in a very
relationship with her mother is in a similar way to our relationship with our father.
Yes, and then hers with her dad. It's just so nice to see the different perspective. Like, hey, I look at my mom, she's still mom. Like, and my dad's still my dad, of course. But as a mom, I'm always going to be like, she always needs, hey, honey, you need anything? Like, you good? You health? She's always that motherly role. Whereas then for, I could see maybe for, again, generalizing, for daughters, their dad's always like, hey, honey, you need anything? Like, you always have the opposite sex parent too. That it's just interesting to see.
Yeah. No, and specifically with this book on the Paper Menagerie,
I
did find it beautiful of the metaphor on a that magic breathes life into, like a mother can breathe life into everyday things, of even those little things in your life. Of so in the story, the mother is able to create origami, and she can breathe life into this origami, and their ideas of that's the toys that she creates for her child, and it's connected deeply to her culture, and she's breathing a bit of her life into these toys for her child, giving a bit of herself as entertainment for her child, and a little bit of a connection. And I think back to things of what my mother would do, and there's everyone has that little thing of on the surface level, it's not really monetarily important. It wasn't on all objective scales, it's not that important. But because it came from your mother, she's able to breathe life into something that otherwise didn't have it. Of the a simple thing of food. There's food out there like that objectively is not that good. But because mom used to make it, it just she breathed life into that food, and it brings you back to that feeling of safety and security. And there's always that connection there. I don't know. Do you feel something similar?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think – and going on that point, so Paper Menagerie and how she breathed life into these things. And that perspective of your mom saying and my mom saying about you don't know what love is until you're a mother, until you're a parent. It changed for them. They couldn't even look at life – before they were a mom, can't even relate to it in a way. It makes me think that this term love, I just want to talk about what do we mean by this? When your mother's breathing life into something, and what do we mean by the word love? What is love? What, because we're talking about it's an unconditional thing, the mom to the child. Are we getting at the term love and that feeling, that emotion? Is it in a way a paragon of something that we can never reach infinity of? So love is almost it's not a finite term. It's the fact that moms become moms and then realize everything else in their life, they actually never truly loved as much as they love now. And it only becomes more powerful of an emotion. In the same way, like you could say you love your spouse, girlfriend, fiance, and hey, I like to say after a month or two in, loved her with all my heart. I look today and go, wait, I love her even when you love someone even more over time. You look back and go at your naive view of love months and years ago and go, since I feel it more powerfully now, did I actually love the person after, you know, one date? Yeah. Like, I love her. She's the best. That's what I said about her, you know. But with that feeling and emotion of love, if you're constantly proving your old emotion wrong, doesn't invalidate it. No. But is it almost an ever-reaching end or spectrum that is there a perfect love?
Love, I believe the best definition of love is wanting what's best for the other. And there's a degree of scale behind that of how much you're willing to give for the other person's well-being and best. So a mother wants, and at the extreme end of the spectrum of like the most love is, I want what's best for my child. I'm willing to give anything, my own life for the sake of my child. Your love for a friend, like when your friend gives you good news of, hey, I got this new job, you're like, oh, that's great. You want, the reason why you care is because you want what's best for your friend. The difference is how much are you willing to sacrifice for the best of your friend. Are you willing to say like, oh no, I'm going to give you my job. I'm going to go unemployed for your sake so you have a job.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to celebrate when you take my job. That's different.
Yeah, man, you fucked me good. Way to go.
Woo!
Hey, I'm going to get another one. Take that one too.
Take that one too.
Yeah, it's that.
But that's the
sacrifice.
That's the scale of in the beginning when you don't know all of their flaws, like especially when you first meet your significant other, you think you love her, and it's more of the
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Surface level of attraction and interest and imagining the future of it. And then as time goes on, you realize not just through hypotheticals, but you realize not in the beginning you go, oh, this is what I would sacrifice.
Belief versus conviction again. Yeah.
Later on, you realize how much you have sacrificed and then realize that that's nothing. I would do it all again. That it's not sacrifice in the sense, not a negative term of, oh yeah, I've given these things used to be important to me. They are now not nearly as important as you. And that realization is going, oh, that's how much I love them. So it's the idea of wanting what's best for another. It's the whole idea of the deity, a deity's love. Why are the evil things? Why are you told what to do? It's the idea of God wants what's best for you.
And when you say want what's best for you, does that sort of encompass all the good virtues? So when you're saying you want something that's best for somebody, we're talking about compassion.
That doesn't necessarily mean what that person wants.
Needs.
What does that person need?
Yeah. And just like stories and character arcs, we're looking at what.
But that's why your parents will often saying, hey, I am fine if you hate me now, but I'm going to make you do something that you don't like, but that's what you need. It's what's best for
your well-being.
It's for your own good.
In the future.
And so that's what love is you want what's for their own good.
Love is for the greater good?
For the greater good. But that's why it's kind of a tragedy when you hear about the parents that let their kids do anything. And that there were no boundaries. And that ultimately the kids were just kind of did whatever and the parents didn't seem to care about what the kid did. It's that sense where like, does the parent truly love them? If they don't seem to want what's best.
I would say
could have a scenario where the parent thinks what's best for the child is ultimate freedom. That's a case.
I think that's a case of parenting styles where style where they think they're doing what's best for the kid. And maybe it's being, because there's both ends of the spectrum where you can be you can give too much freedom or you can restrict too much.
Yeah, but I've heard it's a lot of that's an attitude. Like there's the active parenting style, like it's a deliberate decision versus child comes home, parent doesn't realize they did come home.
Oh, that's neglect. Like, yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like you don't want what's best or when the kid asks for something, the parent just gives it to them because it's easier to just give the child the thing than think about what's best for them and to deal with a conversation of saying no. That's harder. Like it's much easier to just like give the kid the candy so the kid shuts up. Give the kid the video game thing so the kid doesn't cry. It's much easier to just give what the child wants. That's not necessarily what the child needs. So that could be a form of sad, tragic abuse.
Well, yeah, I'd say that's definitely a form of parenting styles and going, hey, what's easier, harder route to do, and you're going through the steps of, hey, actually being a parent and restricting things, doing things that are for the child's need is better parenting.
Well, it's ultimately it's the mindset. What they actually do is, it's up to you on how you want to judge parenting styles, but it's mainly what is the parent feeling and how is that parent, what's the mindset? Do they care about what's best for the child? Or do they just want the kid to go away?
Weird curveball, but Confucianism. Confucius, I was researching Confucianism at one okay. point, and he was one of the pillars, or just one of his lessons, was that doing something just because you think it's good, or doing something that's good, isn't what makes something good. Confucius was saying that if you do something with knowledge and sincerity, that you're doing it with the knowledge that the reasoning this is good, and you're sincere about the good action, rather than obviously doing something good for your own benefit in the end of like, I gave sure. to charity so that I don't hate myself every night. Oh, I fill in blank. Yeah. And then, so for a parent, you're kind of looking at that sincerity portion of, hey, are they sincere with, do they think what they're doing is best for their kid, or are they just doing because it's easy?
Yeah,
that I get you. Because I think that if a parent gives more freedom, less freedom to their kid, I think a parent can be sincere. They think what they're doing is right. And maybe they just don't know what they're doing is wrong, especially because every generation that's changing, technology is changing drastically. And I'd like to think that most parents don't look at their... I'm an optimist, Rich. I like to think that most parents don't go to their kid and they're leading them the wrong way purposefully or yeah, easily. Okay. There are plenty of parents like that, I'm sure.
No, I'm giving a very specific scenario of a parent that is not showing proper love to their child is one that an identifier is one that's giving – why are they giving the kid everything they want? Is it because that's what they think is best, or do they just want it because it's more convenient for their lifestyle? And so it's all about sacrifice.
Yeah, if they're not sacrificing, if they're doing it for the wrong reason. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Do you think that we've been talking about the parent, that mother relationship to a child and sacrifice, do you think same thing goes, whether it's, what's the difference between that conditional or unconditional love and sacrifice? Because we're talking about a mother's unconditional love, a father's unconditional love. What if we take it and we go to friendships where it's conditional? What yeah. if you go with, at what point where the romantic relationship does it become conditional to unconditional? Does it ever stretch beyond that? Because that special mother-son, mother-daughter bond, where does the conditional come into play in that sacrifice? Is there a line? So is there any line that a child can cross to where their mother can't somewhere love them? But can that be the same, and can that still be true for other stuff? Like, Rich, if you screw up tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. You say the wrong thing at the wrong time.
You're a loose cannon. You're a freaking loose cannon, bro. Like, I don't even know around you. So if that kind of happens.
Thing is, there is something special about it. I don't know if this is true, but it's, I think, how people generally feel on the difference between a mother and a father's love. Both have a level of unconditional love for the kid. But there's normally in the cultural zeitgeist stories on – you see how mothers treat even their objectively awful children, like abysmally awful, and they're willing to defend their child. You see, watch.
We're not even talking about like little Johnny's a nuisance at school. We're look murderers. At the,
exactly.
Yeah. Columbine shooters.
The mother of a like murderer, like terrible person. You see that it's still there. Like the mother's love just doesn't go away.
I would highly suggest it. Have you seen that video?
I don't know if I've seen that equivalency with fathers.
Well, have you seen that video of the mother and her?
Yeah.
So she had with a TED Columbine, talk, yeah. And her son committed the Columbine shooting. And you look at the mother's reaction to it, and it's kind of this strange feeling of go check it out because she explains it best. All I can describe it as a mixture of extreme sorrow and grief and confusion. Because it's your own child that you raised that did this. So
the thing is, I'm
curious
on why that seems to be true and at least shown a lot more with mothers than it is with fathers. Like a father does have unconditional love for their child, but we don't see that same kind of story play out very often. Now, I don't see that very often.
Is it part of it biological to where that feel a mother to child relationship, it's brought the child into the world literally, and the dad didn't have to do all that much,
you know, he had his part at the beginning.
Your dad's a sleazeball, let's get so the dad doesn't have to put as much of a risk. There isn't as much of a stake when it comes to sex. Mm-hmm. Like the act of sex, there's not as much of for a father, for any guy out there, it's you don't have, there's not as much consequences. And by consequences, I put that in the
The biological aspect of
it's much more
a man can have thousands of kids. A mother can only have so many.
Yeah. Yes, and so with a mother and having you bear that kid for 9 months and then bring the child into the world, breastfeed or other new tech stuff that
newfangled technology.
The thing to put it here, it's great technology. It's great, and so. If whether you use however it happens. So
there's a different physical connection between a mother and her child than a father. Like not only is there the, you know, mother's carried the child inside her for 9 months, but then there's even the connection afterward. I mean, if you include breastfeeding, there's like a child needs skin to skin contact with their mother. Needs it. That's a necessity. Like a mother's touch is a requirement.
What about a child's touch?
Yeah, that we need not that.
Okay.
You can keep your hands to yourself.
I'll keep them both right here.
Risky. Risky guy. By the way, a little aside,
yeah.
If you ever wanted to know what type of drunk Austin is, you wouldn't have guessed it. He's a touchy drunk. It's weird. No, you're just touchy. Like you like to just hugs and your arms goes around shoulders.
Can we clarify this is your touchy? Can we clarify this is for my friends? And I don't just go around touching people.
I don't see you get drunk that often. And when you do, just a little handsy.
You're gonna be in so much trouble. I've been told I'm I think twice a year I'll drink.
Yeah.
Maybe once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Not around you anymore.
No,
you don't deserve
good.
You don't deserve the affection. but you were making a point right before that.
I was.
What was the point?
I don't know. It's a podcast. That's how things go. They can listen.
Oh, that friendship. That friendship, love and bond versus.
Well, it's the idea of a mother's relationship to a child is different
in a
physical manner.
Yes.
Of course, it's going to be different compared to a father, even if it's. They're both significant, but they're different. And tying it back to the story of wanting what's best for John, that level of sacrifice of the mother in the paper menagerie is willing to sacrifice her own happiness, her own connection with her culture to a certain degree for her child's happiness, and understands that she believes, I think wrongly, but she believes that she herself is a hindrance to her child's well-being. And so that's why she kind of takes that step back and is not pushing that relationship on her child. And that's the tragic thing, is later on the child realizes that how much pain he put her through and that she was willing to do it for him. And that there was no real resentment.
I want to get to the core of what you're saying here, because a lot of this that we're talking about is this an evolutionary, biological? Is there a connection? Is that deep love because the species needs to prolong and survive? Mm. Or is love greater than that? Is it something that is beyond the evolutionary, beyond the biological? Now, of course, we could even go down. We're talking parents to child. We could talk about, hey, even in friendships, our friendships to their core, like let's get rid of all the lovey-dovey. Let's get rid of all of our emotional discussion about this. Do we feel some love for friends or romantic partners? Because in a way, hey, a partner completes me and gives me this kind of purpose. And does a friendship, being very reductionist
about
this.
Is it a beneficial biological reaction or is it an intangible, ethereal thing? If I knew, I would be going to church more often. I don't know. It's one of those things of logically, there's no good logical explanation for it. There's no scientifically speaking, there's no evidence for a ethereal connection of love. However, your subjective feelings on like I don't feel like my love for my mother or a love for a friend is just a chemical reaction that benefits me, because very often that's exactly it. Of you realize that love with the sacrifice. Like, this doesn't benefit me. This is a disadvantage to me personally, and yet I'll do it anyway. That doesn't seem like a very evolutionary benefit.
Right, and is a part of that going down to, and here's the thing, what I think about love too is I also don't know. And I like to think, and love is almost understandable, and this kind of thought process of going, is it just a chemical reaction? Mm-hmm. Of even that sacrifice, could one argue that that sacrifice you're making is
for the good of the species rather than,
when maybe not even species, maybe it's just a sacrifice you're genuinely making, and you make that because you care about your emotional reaction to, you don't want that person, you couldn't even live with yourself, or you feel like it's the right, you've convinced yourself it's the right thing to do, and there's almost an ego to that of saying, hey, if I'm going to sacrifice for mother to son, any type of relationship, you go and you save your friend's life, and you go into the process. Is there almost a kind of chivalry or moral, you convinced yourself empathetically or morally that this is the right thing to do, and therefore that's why you do it as well. So all I'm getting at is, can you reduce it to chemical biological reactions? I think you could argue that. Can you reduce it to, it's an emotional feeling and it's unexplainable? I think you can argue that. And sure, this whole exploration with love, and I think other languages, when they say the word love, there's love in English, there's only one word for love, and other languages I know have other words to describe a certain kind of love.
Which is bonkers, because the English language has so many, like, English poetry is beautiful because we have so many different words for things, and yet something like love, we have one word for.
When we were in elementary school, there was, the only thing we could say is, I like her. We had to say like because there was no term for between like and love. What is there?
Yeah.
We need new terms here.
I need another word.
She arouses. No, that doesn't make, no.
That's not good.
Elementary school kids, don't say that word. We need to look for a better word that kind of increases the importance of the love or what we're talking about. Because if in language, instead of saying, hey, love my mom, love my friend, I could be like, hey, I love the guy I just met on the street. I just want a different word for street guy and mom. Yeah. Because I wanna say to the street guy, like, I like him.
Just like saying the I love my fellow man, like, as a human term.
Right.
I don't love my fellow man the same way I love my mother.
Precisely. We need a different term.
I'd be willing to do unspeakable things to my fellow man for certain reasons. Not to my mother. My mother holds a
higher echelon.
She's a different echelon tier of love.
Yeah.
The random people don't equate.
To the ramble tier list on who we love most coming
there
soon.
There we go. No, it's honestly a big reason why I don't like the overuse of the word. I don't like saying I genuinely don't like saying, like, I love you to a friend very often. It's just, even just using it feels like watering down the term.
I get you because it diminishes it when you say it so often. Do you actually mean what you're saying?
Exactly.
What Rich, if Rich is going around and his best buds and loving everybody, what am I to them?
You meet the person, you know, once, and it's an acquaintance. I love you, man. Like, it just feels wrong to water down the word.
And to that as well, if people are more flexible with their use of love, maybe the way you say it, like, hey, love you, versus mom, I love you. Like, maybe
it could,
you can emphasize in your tone and get a little bit of that.
Oh, yeah.
But English still needs another several words.
It's a personal preference.
Let's create one. What do you think an alternative word for love could be? This is on the spot.
On the spot, the alternate word. Mm-hmm. I mean, why can't English just steal from other language?
Oh, just use a different
word.
We could do that. We've done that plenty of times.
I mean, mi amore.
I got it.
We use a different language.
Amor.
Mi amor.
Mi amor means that
just to insult them. That's the lesser one. That's the in-between love. There we go. Their version of love is...
Love, and then the upper echelon love is you teeter my totter, you complete me. So gross. If you love your mother, if you love your mother, you'll go buy a teeter my totter t-shirt.
Yeah, we do need to plug merch.
Check out our... Look at this hat.
I'm wearing a hat Ramble hat.
And also, we have a Patreon book club. Join us every month. Usually we talk about books. We're kind of talking about Paper Menagerie. But
kind of.
We're really talking about love. And
yeah.
If you guys want to... We'll discuss love with anybody. Go ahead, join our Patreon.
Yeah, sure.
In description below. But anyways...
Speaking of love, do you want to play your grandmother's
Absolutely.
Video?
My grandma, special guest grandma who is on here for the Lord of the Rings episode. This is her... clip of what it means to be a mother and that motherly love.
This is for Austin. I think a mother's love is eternal. It's forever. It's very precious. And it's something that should be appreciated, endured, and forever. That's it.
Thank you, Grandma.
Aww. Pure and sweet.
See, that's when we're having this long podcast, two guys in front of a mic, we're trying to go, here's what we're doing. We're going, love? Is it a chemical reaction? Is it a feeling? The true answer is from the mother's perspective, it's just eternal and it's love. And that's what love is. And that's the better way to live life. Instead of having an hour long podcast on what's love, even though we kind of love talking about this. I use the word love. I do love talking about this.
I like talking about this.
I survive your company,
mm-hmm.
and I love the conversation that happens.
There you go.
So
that's the thing. You don't have any other friends that are willing to talk about this kind of stuff with you at this length.
No.
No other friend would tolerate that. That's why you're with me.
Do you have any? I think it explains why you're here, too. Those who throw stones.
No, I do, but they're not in the state. Mm. That's the thing.
Phone calls exist, but you hate phone calls.
I do hate phone calls.
Tough.
Well, no, I hate texting. Yeah, I also hate phone calls.
You hate them all.
I apparently don't like talking. Which is ironic, but...
Yeah, it is a bit ironic.
I like phone calls well enough. I just don't like texting. Texting sucks. It's terrible. We should have gotten rid of that. We went backwards with texting.
Well, what do you think the next step is evolutionarily?
Do you want pessimist Richard or optimist Richard?
There's an optimist Richard. I didn't know that.
I mean, there is. He's deep down in there.
Give me both.
Okay. Optimist Richard is saying that with increased levels of technology that we will be able to directly transmit feelings and emotions to other people and to have a much deeper connection. So we break past the barrier of language. The pessimist side of me is that our language is going to devolve into more and more pictures and in referential memes, and that brain rot is actually the real future of communication.
Skibbity kai sanat.
Yes.
Like that's going to be the new lingo.
Yeah, that's pessimist Richard of language is getting worse. Like not good.
I think we should make it a point here to try to learn new words and try to keep our diction nice and spry and spickety.
I've tried. It's hard.
It is tough. We read books. I like a lot more when I'm reading things. I am not looking up the definition more because I found that when I look up the definition of a word I don't know, I look up the definition, it goes in one ear and out the next, and I'm more focused on reading the definition than the word. And the more I read that same word in the context, I then have a better understanding of it because I'm going, oh, I've seen that using this must mean what it means. Rather than focusing on Webster, I focus on
my recommendation for it is you can do that, but what you should do is you look up the word, realize, then go back a couple paragraphs. Read it again, because then the word is now in context, and so you won't remember you looking it up, but you will remember the scene which it took place.
That is great advice.
Because if you just read the definition and then go, oh, I understand it, and move on, you won't remember that.
I agree, if we didn't have reading speeds and goals to hit. We gotta be reading, Rich.
That's okay.
We don't have time to go backwards.
You gotta get one of these. We gotta go forwards.
Actually,
I don't have a Kindle. I got fancy books. I love this thing. But no, the ability to just look up a word, like,
oh, that is nice.
For ebooks, being able to do that is lovely.
I just love books more.
Yeah.
Wait, can you, what about with the last, well, this is the end of the conversation here.
Okay.
I just declared it, like.
Yeah, sure.
I think it would be a good one to end on is when people say they love their hobbies, like, hey, I love books. Even in that term, while we're kind of looking for a different form of love, hey, this is something that I love to do.
It almost feels like an oxymoron. Because the hobby, the idea of it being a hobby means you're not passionate enough to normally pursue it as your highest goal. Like, a hobby is something you do on the side when you have time.
I a little disagree with that because sometimes hobbies can't make money. Sure. So like somebody's, they could love their hobby more than their job, but just not have the capability of going like, oh, I'm going to go all in on a podcast.
But you understand like the idea of sacrifice. Yeah. That if we're talking about love being the ultimate sacrifice, a hobby is something that you're not willing to sacrifice a great deal for. Like you're willing to spend your free time and you're willing to do – there's different degrees. There's the hobby that like, oh yeah, if I got time, I'll play kickball on Saturdays versus the person who's like, I'm spending 50% of my salary on my hobby. There are different levels, but you convinced me. Ultimately,
that's a good argument. Yeah.
To take that hobby to the next level, you have to, like, you are sacrificing everything.
Like,
for
do
it.
You love that's, that hobby more than your safety, security, and job that provides for your family?
That's love.
So
that's when I go, yeah, you love your hobby. You're willing to sacrifice everything for your hobby. And that's why it's so great to watch movies and read books on people with great passions that are willing to throw away everything, even their relationships with their friends and their family, for the sake of their great love and passion for something. That's and their point. Purpose.
That is rich. That was well said. I love that. I love that.
There you go.
I like you. All right, everybody. That was another Shooter Ramble episode. Talk about love. Let us know if you like this one. At the end, maybe we should say people should comment down below with suggestions or something.
We should. Yeah. If you got all the way to the end here, you're going to notice this video is not a tier list, so it's not going to do that well. But we enjoy it. This is proof that we're fairly authentic people because this is a video we know it's not going to do well. But we do it because we love doing this stuff. That's how you know we're not complete corporate shills.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. Hopefully one day some big corporation
here,
wants
Bezos.
To give us a bunch
Come
of money.
Come on, Bezos. Buy nothing. Me out.
Oh, I'd love to be tempted. I would love it.
Tempt us so we can reject it. Because we love this.
No.
That'll
I could use a little bit of money. That'd be nice.
Hey, so far... Open on. We've rejected $500-$600 deals for things we don't like. That's our cap right now. We have rejected.
That's true.
That's not bad. But that's hey, bad. If those went to $5,000-$6,000, then we our morals. So far, we're staying true.
So far, our view on money has helped us away from corruption of our morals because
who cares about
money's
money?
Not real.
It's not real.
It's not real. It's numbers on a screen. So yeah, exactly. You put that. However many digits behind it.
$10 for a Patreon on Tudor Ramble, it's nothing.
It's nothing.
Do it.
Yeah, why not? Money's not real. Why not give us $10 a month for a book club? You could. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy. But being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.